The Chris Perillo Show's coverage of the Desktop Linux Summit is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.
There are many surly men in this industry of geeks, but the surliest man I know is Doc. Doc Searles.
You know, I recently discovered that my surname, which rhymes with surly, in fact has its origins in an old Norman, the old Norman word, S-E-R-L-E, stood for armed, like bearing arms, and the term surly is derived from that. So like, it's like, you know, assholes from way back.
So do you feel that way when you come to conferences like this?
Not really. I'm a pretty, you know, even-tempered kind of guy.
Disarmed?
Yeah, yeah. Not bearing arms, kind of like playing. I'd be good for soccer. Don't use your arms at all.
You know, now I've got that mental picture. I'm sure someone's going to Photoshop. Head.
Yeah, Doc has no arms. It's like
not or just playing arms. Soccer.
Or just playing soccer. Yeah,
one of the two. So you did your presentation today, mm-hmm. and I've been lucky enough to witness a few of the Searles presentations.
You missed it today, though, didn't you?
Yes, I apologize.
Talk about this. I'll get surly now.
I was geeking out on this side of things.
I needed an audience in there. I didn't have enough of them.
Really?
Yeah, it was a half a house.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, did you play right after lunch or right around lunch?
Yeah, 2:45.
Oh, okay. Do you think they were asleep?
No, they weren't asleep. We kept them awake, but there was less than critical mass.
You know, I'm
a stage hog. I want an audience.
Right. I hear you.
I like to work the crowd.
That's my worry, is because I'm the last one coming up tomorrow.
You're worse than I am at this shit.
Oh, God. Well, my presentation is definitely audience dependent. Like, if I do not have an audience, it will not work.
Yeah, you in fact have a dependency.
Yes.
You have an audience dependency.
And getting those
dependencies. Is there a name for this? Is there some
apt-get?
Is there
odd-get, maybe?
Odd-get?
Audophilia,
I think that's what it is. Audophilia.
You have Audophilia.
He's an autophiliac. He needs an audience.
You know, I got used to it after. It was difficult to do when I first started doing radio, and just a few years ago, nothing compared to your background in radio. And after I did Tech
really,
TV.
I have a remarkably small background in radio. Considering
yes, but you've been doing it for years. And I mean, when I mean
I suppose. Yeah, I my blog is a radio show.
It's
in text.
Using all. Radio, of all
yeah.
things.
Yeah, Radio Userland, coincidentally named.
But you've recently launched your IT Garage.
IT Garage, yeah.
Now, is that in conjunction with another project?
It's a Linux Journal related thing. It's meant to address one of the issues that I brought up in the talk today that you missed.
Thank you.
See, I'm not normally passive aggressive, but I can work it in there. which is that most of what's actually happening in IT, I discover in my work for Linux Journal, as an editor for Linux Journal, does not involve vendors. And most of what's covered in the magazines is what I call vendor sports. Right, it's like Linux versus Microsoft. Who wins? Right, and that's not even the choice in many cases. Or it's, you know, who are the Linux leaders? Is it IBM or is it HP? And it's neither. Right, I mean, it's their followers. In fact, I mean, the ones leading are the hackers themselves. I mean, they're the, you know, the sysadmins and the you know, the website administrators and the Perl and Python programmers and the guys that actually implement this.
You know, I'm not.
And they're not writing about this.
Yeah, it didn't really hit me until just today that Novell seems to be a new character on this landscape.
Yeah, we're glad they're there. I mean, we like it that Novell's there and that HP's there and all these other guys are there. But most of the interesting stuff that's happening does not involve vendors.
And what do you define as interesting?
Oh, like the David, I'm forgetting his last name. It was just here a minute ago. I mean, they built an enormous pipe organ.
Oh, yes.
In New York, and it's all. I mean, maybe it's got Red Hat stuff in it, but I don't even know. But what matters is that they, using almost entirely open source stuff, they built out this incredible pipe organ.
Dave he went as far as to get a piece of hardware. It connects by a serial port. It's a weather gauge so that as the temperature shifts, sound actually shifts in this virtual pipe organ.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, it's extremely cool. And I mean, there's so many projects that are you don't hear that much about because there's no PR firm pushing them. You know, there's no vendor calling me up you know, saying, you have to meet with our CEO because we have a new strategy.
Why isn't there some type of open source PR firm then? I mean,
I thought there were a couple of, but, well.
No money?
No, because it's just that they don't go together. I mean, in the open source world, they mostly know that PR is bullshit, and they're not bullshit guys. And Linux actually is not. Here he is. He's right here. I was just talking about your stuff. Turn your badge around so I get your. Okay, great, David. I got my glasses off. Hold on a second.
Grants.
David Grants. Okay. Yeah. So, anyway, but this. Where were we?
Talking about vertical applications and PR, money, they don't go hand in hand, oil and water.
No, I mean, see, here's the thing. That what the mainstream press has always wanted to cover is who's fighting who. What's the struggle? You know, that's what stories are about. Stories are about struggle.
Sizzle.
No, it's not just sizzle. It's a problem. You know, stories don't start with happily ever after. You've got a character you can identify with. You've got some situation that's a problem. And you've got movement, at least, toward a resolution, right? That's all stories. That's what sports exist for. They exist only to be stories. There's no if the home team is up by 40 points with 10 seconds left, or a minute left, the struggle now is how to get out to the parking lot ahead of the other people because the game's over. The story's over, essentially, right? So that nothing happening in open source. Other than, you know, some geeks like yearning for world domination and stuff like that. That's sort of an artificial issue. The truth is that, and it's a mundane truth, is that most open source tools and components are building materials in their tools. Okay, and a point that I made today is that the computer industry is moving inexorably, unavoidably, to becoming something very much like the construction industry, from which it borrows its vocabulary. Okay, we have architects and designers, and we may build sites, and we have tools, and we have platforms, and we have components, and you know, we borrow the language of construction to talk about what we do. That's not just coincidental. There is a lot in common there, and the open source ethos is very much like the ethos of guys working in construction and architects and builders who want to be able to choose whatever they want to build whatever they want. They don't want to say, wait a minute, we have to build this house on the Weyerhaeuser platform, right? Or the Dow Corning platform or the Georgia Pacific platform. And none of those vendors of parts is vain or stupid enough to say, you can't build you have to use Georgia Pacific approved doorknobs, you know, that because they're, you know, they're, you know, somebody who belongs to our development community. It's insane and it's wrong. And that's where we're headed. See, there is no platform in the open source world. That's why comparing Linux to Microsoft or to Windows is beyond apples and oranges. I mean, Linux doesn't care if you swap it out. Linus isn't even caring. In fact, Linus's favorite mantra is, I don't care. Ask him a question, he's going to say, I don't care. For the most part, unless you're talking about kernel development.
Did he care about the whole WinX thing that apparently went out? Wired that had seeded this pseudo letter between Linus and Bill Gates?
Well, if it didn't happen, I'm sure he'd care that it got, you know, he'd be misrepresented.
No, it's Wired wrote a parody article as if Linus had gone to work for Microsoft. And they were creating the WinX operating system. and there's this whole internal struggle between Ballmer and Linus over whether or not it's called WinX or WinUX. And
was it funny?
Oh, it's incredibly funny.
That's good.
Funny.
If it's funny, it's good. But even that, even the fact that they did that particular parody shows what the bias is toward. Like, it's always with most, and I work for a magazine, right? We'll get more readers if we do a let's you and him fight, right? That's interesting.
People love controversy.
People love stories, and stories are about conflict, right? So you invent a conflict. I understand why Microsoft feels a bit threatened by Linux, but Microsoft is a combative company that loves to feel threatened no matter what, and that's just in their bones.
They thrive on
that shit, and it makes them a great company.
But what do you think?
But Linus is not busy. He never went into business to attack Microsoft or he doesn't care whether Bill Gates feels attacked or not. He just doesn't care. He's building something. He's creating building material. It's 2x4s. Linux is essentially 2x4s and studs and joists and stuff like that. and what you put in the house and what you what sheetrock you use and you know what electrical stuff, don't care.
So this is the future, you're saying. How are we going to get from where we are today to that idealistic?
Well, it's not idealistic, it's actually realistic. It's
well, at this point,
okay,
it's idealist.
We're going to make the transition to podcasting. Okay.
Okay.
So no big company did podcasting. You know, Adam Curry and Dave Slusher and you and Dave Weiner and a few other small fry, frankly, you know, I mean, not that big brand
it's
name
true.
Companies saw something that they wanted to do and they did it, you know, and they could do it together because they're using essentially open source means. I mean, RSS is an open standard. You know, the iPodder, you know, components
stuff,
or
yeah.
stuff, whatever it is. You know, it's all any. Here's the thing: the net is really the first stage, okay? And with the net, we created essentially a new world. And it's a place. I mean, we can understand it either as a place or as a plumbing system. Those are the two main metaphors that we use. I mean, when we talk about sites that have addresses and locations and so forth, that's a place. When we say we go on the net, that's a place. And when we talk about a commons, you know, which is how we want to license things, okay, that's a place. And you have free speech in a place. Richard Stallman's free as in freedom principle really applies there, okay? Now, you know, on the net, we can build whatever we want. I mean, it's this habitat where we can create our own natural building materials, essentially. It's like we make our own agriculture, you know, we make our own trees and we mill them into whatever we want to mill them into. And big companies could participate in that, and they could contribute to it a great deal. But that's basically what we're doing. I mean, the whole podcasting movement is a perfect example of the demand side supplying itself. In a mature industry like construction, DIY is a huge part of it. Home Depot and all those hardware stores wouldn't be in business if there was not a huge DIY side to it. And what we have now is DIY. We don't have to depend. I mean, it's fine that Microsoft and Borland and Apple and these other companies have development environments. And I mean, power to them. Great thing. But you're locked into them, right? They lock you in. On the other hand, I mean, I shouldn't say that. Not in every case, but there probably somebody from Borland's going to say, we do some stuff. But the thing is that the principles underneath the net, there are three of them. David Weinberger and I kind of came up with this as a post Clue Train thing. Nobody owns it.
The caboose, if
it's
you will.
It's a caboose, yeah.
Okay.
And nobody owns it. Everybody can use it, and anybody can improve it. And that third thing is what really matters. And the first thing, nobody owns the net. Anybody can use it, and anybody can improve it. And the hackers are in charge of that. And any one of us who feels like being a hacker, even an Adam Curry, I mean, that's one of the wonderful ironies that Dave Weiner talks about. You know, suddenly he's the he's the performer and less the coder, and Adam is more the coder and less the performer when they started out. It's like, because Adam had these ideas about how to do iPodder. I need an automated way to get a podcast onto an MP3 player. And so he, like, wrote some stuff.
Who was the guy that came up with the term? There was a...
I forget his name. Yeah.
Daniel... I'm drawing a blank on his last name.
Man, he needs to work on branding.
Yeah, no, it's a... Yeah, at BloggerCon, in fact, Dave Slusher went out of his way to point to him next to him and say, this guy here, he named, you know...
The phenomenon.
The phenomenon of podcasting, but...
Well, it's just made things...
I named blog rolling, it didn't matter.
You did? Know. Really?
Yeah.
Well, you had one of the first ones, too.
It's an obvious thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, it's, you know, who cares?
It's what it is. It's a Rolodex.
Yeah.
Of sorts.
Of sorts.
So...
It's an old hat now.
Well, people have them, they just... don't really need them as much as they once did, because you've got different tools, more mature tools like Technorati has been working on various and sundry things, and these things like Delicious and Flickr just kind of spring out of nothing, seemingly nothing, taking what already existed and making it just a little bit better.
Yeah, and turning stuff back over to the community. I mean, Dave Sifry is working with Steve Gilmore, who's a journalist, okay, and as a journalist is an authority on XML, and who used to, by the way, he was a producer for the Firesign Theater a long time ago, and on something called attention.xml. It's another standard, right? But I mean, it's a perfect. Steve is a perfect example. He's a journalist who says, "Wait a minute, we need a new standard here. So let's create a new standard." And he works with an actual hacker who's Dave Siffrey or anybody else who will work with him. And Steve's very good at that. He's just going to hound somebody until they finish helping him.
He kind of forced me to do another GNOME Dex. Well, I can't say forced.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Steve is a producer. he's producing at all times. You know, when I wrote something he didn't like, and he calls me. He's a cranky guy. He calls me up and he says, he does irascible very well. He calls me up and says, okay, you know, first of all, you were full of shit with what you wrote today. So is Scoble. I just finished regrooving Scoble, and now it's your turn.
Oh, no.
What does regrooved mean?
Oh, man.
I just love the term, though. And he, you know, straightened me out. I don't even know what I said, but...
It's just like blog rolling. It meant nothing, and then suddenly it means something. Or podcasting.
Yeah, yeah.
And podcasting was coined by Danny Gregori, or if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
It's an Italian name, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's not Gregoire. If it was Italian, I'm Italian.
I hope he's not listening right now because he's hating all three of us.
I'm sure. Well, like I said, branding. He needs branding.
Somebody Americanized it to Gregory, so I'm assuming that it is some variation on that.
We're making it worse.
Well, yes, we're making it much worse.
But hey, at least we're trying to give credit where credit is due.
Yeah. It's a futile, feeble compromise.
Danny G.
Effort right now.
Yeah, Danny G. Coined.
Danny, yo, it's almost. Danny G.
There
yeah.
you go. There
yo.
You go.
Yeah, so now we've rebranded him.
Yes. Effectively. We're his new open source PR firm.
And I bet we're fired.
Most likely.
Teamwork, and it's worthless.
That's the way open source works.
It can. Yeah, it does it.
But it's the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
And I find that when I immerse myself into environments in which I feel like I know the least, I find myself actually more comfortable in a room where I know the least. Because I'd rather not be the smartest person in the room. Can you
identify the people who are dumber than you here?
Well, no, he left already.
There's some people raising their hands.
Yeah, it's objective, subjective,
relative.
It's relative. There we go.
Injective,
and it may be a relative as well, because a lot of my relatives are actually stupider than
Polyjective,
I am.
Polyjective, adjective,
or objective.
Yeah.
To use the audience term again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
So we were going to talk about podcasting. We have people recording us. They're filming us right now.
Well, we're recording this too.
Podcasting.
We're actually doing
recording.
Yes. We're not just holding up the mics.
You're not video. You're invisible.
We don't exist because we don't have a camera.
Most likely. Yeah. And doing a camera production is usually a little more intense.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You have to, you know,
it's much
look
more
nice.
Tape consuming.
Yeah. I definitely would have done my hair this morning had I known we were going to be
on
video.
Oh, you didn't do your hair?
No.
Oh.
All of them?
Yes, all of them.
Yes. So I kind of make a joke about this in my slide. It seems the only time I get to see you are at conventions or conferences. Why
right.
is that?
Because we live in different cities.
Yeah.
And we both go to conferences.
That's true, I guess.
So, but conferences are, I mean, I love conferences.
Why?
Well, because I get to see people, for one thing. And I learn a lot more. And you know, great stories show up. And I, you know, I write stories. I write stories for Linux Journal and, you know, for other places. And it's you know, an industry like this one has no main street, you know. So it's not like you can walk outside of the cleaners where you are and go to the restaurant next door or something else. You know, this is our main street.
And wouldn't consider Slashdot?
And we tear it up and, no. I like Slashdot, but that's not what it is. I mean, Slashdot's a, you know, it's one of the places where people gather and talk about stuff. But it's no substitute for actually seeing people.
Interaction.
Yeah.
Real interaction.
Yeah, real interaction. Yeah, I mean, that's what you get here. And you get to see stuff. I mean, people can show stuff off. You know, somebody can hand you a CD and say, here, this is the music I did. Here's the code that I did. Here's this other thing. Or like right now, I've had enormously good, I mean, it's not a big secret, but it's a great place to get tech support. And the geekier conferences are wonderful for this. You know?
So you
And this has been really good. I mean, before I went on today, because I needed to convert a PowerPoint document to an open office document, what do? I go over to the open office booth and I get major open office hackers to show me how to do font substitution and a lot of other really cool stuff I didn't know about OpenOffice, even though I've used it. That's really handy. You know, I've got somebody right now who's a major hacker who's in the press room who's like doing all kinds of stuff to one of the three laptops that I brought with me.
Oh boy!
Yeah.
Installing like Trojans and stuff.
Yeah, right. Yeah. See, Linux doesn't have viruses yet, so let's see if we can work on that one.
Make a new one.
He's not doing that. No. He's being helpful. Yeah.
So you find it's easier to get in touch with the community by actually getting in touch with them instead of necessarily just writing about them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's you want to be. I mean, at this point too, I know a lot of these guys. You know, and there's certain people like George Wright, who's I see here every year. He just wandered off. I'm gonna have dinner with him tonight. So this great guy. I only see him at this particular show or at other things in San Diego. I met Charlie Jackson here for the first time, who did Silicon Beach Software. He's one of the legends of the software industry, and was sort of thinking out loud of getting back in after years of doing things like being an Olympic athlete. In the meantime,
wow.
And he can bring some stuff to. I mean, he's on the outside looking at open source and saying, what can I do with this? And he's seeing a lot of really cool stuff. And more power to him. I'd love to see him do that. But I mean, on email, you know, what would happen? You know, or on Slash, if I met him, do I meet him on Slashdot? You know, no. It's the kind of thing at a show like this, somebody just walk up to you, or you can walk up to somebody and say, hey, let's talk. You know, have you got a minute?
And they've got apparently a Linux World conference coming up within the next couple of weeks.
Next week.
In Boston.
Boston, yeah.
Are you going to that as well?
Yeah, I have to get clothes first, but yeah.
Oh, so you're making a brief stop at home and then off again?
Oh, yeah, I live in Santa Barbara, yeah. So I drove down here, and so I'll drive home and then have a weekend, write some stuff, visit my kid.
my
wife and my kid, and then go to Boston. And then.
What are you hoping to see there?
And E-Tech after that. That's right.
NPC
Forum in Arizona. And there's a geek cruise this next fall that I'll be going on.
Oh, wow.
The geek cruises are great. If anybody's...
Neil Bauman, is it?
Neil Bauman. Yeah. Geekcruises.com.
What's being covered on that one?
That one is... it's called Linux Lunacy. Linus himself has been on some of the recent ones. He was on two of them that I was also on. I don't know if he's on the one this last fall because I missed that one. There's another one called Pearl Whirl that's on the same boat, but they're not... You know, they're not... I mean, he's sort of doubling up administration, but they're two different tracks, as it were. Of course, you know, they'll have like 100 to 200 people in the boat holes, 1,300 or 1,500 or something like that, and the rest of them are going to be, you know, geezers. So,
yeah, like just regular workaday folks who are just
the cruisers
there.
Cruisers.
Yeah. Bunch of people that are retired and they want to get some food.
Much like the hotel that Jake and I are staying in right now.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's horrible.
Really? Wow.
It's like you walk into grandmother's bedroom
every day.
The
Marriott courtyard here is good.
When we went in, we specifically asked if there was internet when we got there, because this is
one of the great failings of all of the travel sites right now. What we want to start with, does it have high speed internet? And then we want to narrow it down from there.
The hotel was booked for us, so we didn't really even get that option necessarily.
Oh, really?
But so we ask when we get there, is there high speed internet? And the guy says, and any time that anything starts with,
you just don't want that.
Yeah. So there's dial up,
and that's just not internet access.
Yeah. And of course,
we have ports. You know.
Yeah, data ports.
When they say data port, that's code for
no.
There's a hole on the phone that says data port for Yeah.
Or we have an iMac over in that corner that you could use to internet your email.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we have a business center.
Yes.
Which is closed. It's open 3 hours a day. And
during non-business hours.
It consists of a Pentium 3 and a blurry screen.
And a fax machine.
And a fax machine. Yes. Exactly. It's got a fax machine.
And actually, oddly enough, I needed a fax machine at a conference that we attended in L.A., and I could not find one.
Oh yeah,
no one had a fax machine.
Well, doing the Gilmore Gang, like this is a podcast that I do with the Steve.
I've
Gilmore
never heard of that one. Is that?
Does anyone listen to that?
Anyway, but often because I'm on the road, I'll have to find. You can't do it over a cell phone. Cell phones have this automatic gain control thing that amplifies background noise if you're not talking, and so you can always tell when somebody's got a cell phone because unless they're in an anechoic chamber, you're going to hear all the background noise. So you have to find a landline, and so I you know, I look for a hotel or something like that, or a shopping center, and I'll literally find places where there used to be a phone on the wall and it's been torn out, right? Or it's just, it's idle. It's not working anymore.
When was the last time you saw a phone booth? Can you even remember?
Airports have them.
Yeah. They do have these little kiosks kind of things. Yeah, there's some, like at the Los Angeles Convention Center, relatively recently built place. There's this whole phone bank, you know. Remember how it was at Comdex 15 years ago?
I was never there.
You would see lines of people to use the phones, right? You're too young.
I'm way too young.
You're way too young.
Yeah. Well, does that make you way too old?
Yeah, actually. That doesn't stop me.
I mean, it shouldn't.
No.
It shouldn't.
I'm generally the oldest guy. That's a weird thing, but I'm 57.
I think I saw a 58-year-old here earlier.
Really?
He looked younger.
Was he being assisted, or was
he had a walker?
Did he have a walker?
Still getting around.
It was being controlled. The walker was actually electronically being controlled by a Lynx distribution.
In fact, it's parked right over there. Yeah. The Segway.
He's flopping over there because the IV pulled out.
The manual Segway where you have to like push it with your foot. I think Heather, the PR.
I'm just
for
thinking
Wingspire.
Of a Segway from hell. It's like, I don't know.
Have you ridden a Segway yet?
Oh yeah, yeah.
You have.
Yeah, in any place where you know Philip Tyrone goes, the Segway goes. And I run into him at conference. He brought he and Beth Goza both brought their Segways at the time. They keep getting new Segways, which other people get new laptops, or they get new Segways. And they were at Foo Camp, I think, one of the O'Reilly things. And so we took turns riding one of those.
Oh, wow.
Problem is they need like a flat surface. That's the thing. They're really great for warehouses. They'd be perfect here. I mean, this is a perfect place for a Segway.
At a conference.
At a conference, yeah.
Like would you imagine seeing them at a bigger conference like CES?
Oh, yeah, they should be at CES. I was hoping to see a Segway at CES.
The newness has kind of worn off.
When the newness is worn off and you don't see them anymore, you saw some?
They were there 2 years ago.
I'm
talking about seeing customers.
One of the Seattle power companies uses them for their people that go around checking the meters.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I can't remember which power company it is, but I was walking to a coffee shop in my neighborhood, and I see somebody coming towards me on a Segway.
Yeah.
And it
wasn't PT.
Yeah, Park City has like a, in Utah, has a like a Segway store or something. And
retail center?
Sort of advertising because there's this good-looking woman that works there or rides up and down the street in the Segway. And
You thought it was hard to get to an Apple store.
Yeah.
Jeez.
They would work in an Apple store. Actually.
You did?
No, they would work in an Apple store.
Oh, yeah, they would.
Yeah.
I mean, if they were big enough.
Thing. You know what? They don't look slick enough, though. There's a little kind of an industrial thing going on there.
They're a little too boxy.
They look a little too much like Acer made them, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
And they're too expensive.
Yeah.
Sorry.
If Apple made them, they'd be clear or something.
Well, if Apple made them, they'd be twice as much.
Oh, three, four times.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it did nothing more than sync with iTunes.
Yeah. Well, if Apple made them, there would be like one button on it, and you wouldn't know what it would do.
That's one thing I can say about the Mac
Mini. And
people
would say it's a virtue.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Yeah.
But the Mac Mini does not come with a one-button mouse.
It comes with no mouse
exactly.
And no buttons.
That's what I'm saying.
They've taken it to the logical extreme.
No buttons.
Is there even a power button?
Well, everybody wants Apple to come out with a two-button mouse. The next one will have no buttons at all.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised.
You don't even know where it's going to go.
Well, in fact,
we'll call it the mouse shuffle.
They've already had a no-button mouse. You just click it. There's no button. The whole thing is a button.
Oh, yeah, the whole thing goes
so
up and down.
So they've already gone the no-button way.
Yeah. It's like operating a dead turtle.
But no scroll wheel. Yeah, pretty much. Have you ever used a scroll wheel with your mouse?
Yeah.
Can you live without it? Once you've used it,
I love the scroll wheel. But here's another thing. I mean, with Linux, you get the middle button. And,
oh, yeah.
And the middle button do you use Linux at all?
Every once in a while, I'll boot
into
Nopix.
One of the great things about, it's a Unix thing, but I mean, about Linux is that you highlight something. You have now, it's now on your clipboard. And then you hit the middle button and you've pasted it. That is extremely efficient. And that is, when you're hacking away, that gets very cool. And going from that back to one button is kind of a drag.
Oh, that's horrible.
That's kind of a drag.
Well, literally, especially if you have to click and drag.
Yeah. But, you know, every platform's compromised. You know, right now Linux doesn't have enough device drivers.
Is that the thing you think is holding it back?
Well, that and the fact that there are no major OEMs that want to support it. You know,
but now, why is that? Now, you've got efforts, you know, from Michael Robertson's point of view. Lynn Spire should be hit.
Here's the reason. We can't maybe, here's a Toshiba laptop, and it says designed for Windows XP. Okay, so Microsoft is a partner in producing this. It is a Microsoft machine. It is, in fact, an embedded Windows machine. And it's different. I mean, this Toshiba is different than that Toshiba, probably. It's certainly different than the Vio. There are no white box laptops, you know, and that's a problem. I mean, there's and none of the big vendors that could afford, for example, to write the zillion device drivers that you need so you can plug in any random scanner or printer or USB dongle or anything else, it'll recognize it automatically. Now, Chris Borden with Apple, when Apple first came out with OS X, told me that the really big thing with OS X was that Apple went to the trouble of writing a zillion device drivers and doing a better job with their device drivers than the hardware companies would do. Because one of the virtues of Apple is that it's, you know, as I'm sure you know, generally software companies make lousy hardware and hardware companies make lousy software, which is why Nikon, which makes great hardware, when they, you know, give you a CD to, like, manage your camcorder, your camera, is useless. I mean, what is this?
I never install this stuff.
Sony software is horrible, right?
Creative Labs software, just Creative software, is arguably some of the worst hardware software.
Creative has some of the worst drivers in the market.
They know how to make hardware, they can't make software. So Apple hit, I'm getting a signal here. I'm going to dinner with some people, and they're like giving me a hand signal like I'm yapping away. But so what Apple did was, because they had like 0% market share rounded down, right? which is the way most of the, like Canon and Nikon and all those guys saw it. Mm-hmm. And so they said, okay, we're going to write our own device drivers here. And so when you plug in your digital camera, you know, iPhoto or whatever it is going to say, okay, cool. It doesn't even if you don't use iPhoto, it shows up as a drive, right? I mean, it just does it automatically, and it's really smooth. That's not there yet. I mean, I've got a USB, you know, one of those little things that you stick in that has flash.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I've got a camera. I've got the Nikon Coolpix 8800, and it's actually USB 2.0. So I would consider plugging that into my computer. But right now, I've got a USB 2.0 multimedia center in the sense that I can, you know, put in a compact flash, a Type 1, Type 2.
Right.
I could plug in
a media stick.
And you can
plug it into your Toshiba laptop here. Right?
Well, if I had the PCMCIA adapter, yes, I could.
Right. Well, all of that, I mean, Microsoft and its OEMs have thought all that stuff out and tried to make it as easy.
Well, that's
you could complain
debatable.
About it. But and Apple has done it too, but there's nobody playing that role in the Linux category.
Why?
I think the main reasons are
political.
I mean, they're economic and political. I mean, these guys make big money on their laptops. They don't want to make a commodity generic laptop. They want to make one that's different and expensive. And they don't want to make a white box laptop that sells for $800.
Now, who are you?
Not
are you
making
saying
an $800 margin on a Toshiba like this?
These are the IBMs, the Toshibas.
Yeah, these are the OEMs.
Okay,
right? Okay. So I mean,
but they're all made from the same place. They're all probably made in China.
No, they're not. They get outfitted differently. They're all look inside the firmware and the motherboards and these things. They're all different. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't some white box ones, but they're
you never see them.
But yeah, I mean, one of the things I wanted to do is over there is at the Sub 300 booth is like take one of those Linn Spire things and plug it in. Now I did that with that Vio one, you know, the little
the one that broke on me,
the one that broke on you, but mine hasn't broken yet. But the thing
you're
is,
lucky.
I installed the beta version of Windows
5,
yeah. And you know I could plug in USB devices that recognize them. Everything worked fine. The Wi-Fi worked. The Wi-Fi selection was better than Windows. Not as good as the Mac, but the Mac is really slick. Mm-hmm. None of them are perfect either. Apple actually brain dead in theirs by saying, are you sure you want to join the insecure network called something? You know, and there went, you know, trying to get on ad hoc networks in the back of a cab like I used to do in New York City. Mm. So, but the thing is that, you know, somebody's got to take the trouble to finish making a lot of the device drivers.
You think it's going to be Linn Spire?
They're the best candidate right now, I think.
You think so?
Yeah.
Now, that's from just a regular user's point of view, but I don't know if they're attacking the market I think they're actually going below the average user. I think they're going just for the very basic.
Well, what they're doing right now is they're knocking off the, you know, a lot of stuff that Apple and, you know, like with their equivalent of iTunes, you know, looks almost exactly like iTunes. But the difference is it doesn't it doesn't have all the DRM built in. Of course, it doesn't have but it has their own kind of store, I guess. But it's all open source. You can take it if you're a hacker, and you can make something else out of it. You want to do your own iTunes? It's not like Linspire's iTunes. Go take their code and do that. I'm pretty sure that's open source stuff. That's cool. That's really cool. And I don't see anybody else doing that. I mean, in the Linux space. Now, here's an interesting thing that Dick Hart, who has a company called Skip, SXIP, does identity stuff up in Canada, was telling a friend of mine, Kim Cameron, who works for Microsoft, who's an identity chief architect, I think is his term. And they were talking about the insanity of certificates. You know, like there are moments that you run across, especially in Windows. You know, here's a list of certificates. Choose one. And what the freak is a certificate even? Most people. I mean, even the hackers don't even know what's going on. PKI is a really complicated thing to understand, even if you're into it, right? And so Kim says, somewhat rhetorically, who comes up with these crazy ideas? And Dick said, guys who make servers, guys who do servers, guys who come at you from the server. And then Kim said he had an insight about Microsoft, where he's been working for the last 8 years or something. He said, oh, my God, that's why Microsoft is so goofy in some ways. He said, we come at you from the desktop. We actually care about the user, even if they weren't in that particular case. And there's this zone between companies and professionals who care only about the guy, the average user working on a desktop, and people making high-end servers or you know, there's a chasm there. There's a chasm there that's where all those missing device drivers are, for example.
You know? Well, how do we get to them?
And there's other things. Like, for example, and I may be wrong about it, but this is true at least a couple of years ago. It may not be true now, but I think it still is. Let's say you take your... I take my ThinkPad, for example. Okay, my ThinkPad's a dual boot. I have Windows on it. It's got 80 gigs, and I've got like 30 for Windows, so I can do some stuff that can only be done in Windows, like topographic maps. All those guys don't know nothing exists. Other platforms exist, right? Or for taking Sony Attrack and converting into MP3s. That can only be done in Windows, right? But if I do it on Windows, on the Linux laptop, I can see the Windows directory from Linux, and then I can just use it. It's just another directory, which is great. I've now turned an Attrack file into an MP3 file, and now I can manipulate it in Linux.
By the way, there is an opportunity for you to read your Linux drive from Windows.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, there is.
I've not seen it. You can do it? You can do it?
It's out there.
What if I don't want to do that?
Well, then don't install it. That's your prerogative.
Sure, but the thing is, I spend very little time there.
In Windows.
Yeah. But my point is that let's say that I want to play a DVD. Okay, I'm flying across the country and I want to watch a DVD. When I'm using it in Windows, the NVIDIA driver is what's engaged, and probably the CPU goes down. You know, the whole graphics subsystem, whatever that is what's engaged. And that would not happen if there was not a relationship between IBM, Microsoft, and NVIDIA that had to do with the building out of that stuff.
But doesn't NVIDIA have a relationship with the Linux community as well?
I don't think so. But I don't know. Not that I would. There are people out here shaking their heads. I don't think it's there. And partly
in what capacity?
Well, NVIDIA is a proprietary company. Okay, they make closedware. Okay, I'm not going to knock them. I'm just going to say there's a lot of people in my community who aren't going to want to deal with that because, well, screw it. Okay, it'll hit the battery, but you know what we're going to do? We're just going to run this off the CPU. You know, if there's a 2 gigahertz now, CPU here, let's run it. Well, the battery goes down in half an hour, but you can watch your DVD. And on top of that, let's say you want to take a screenshot of that DVD. Okay, you're watching The Matrix and you want a picture of Trinity jumping in the air. If you try to do that on Windows or you try to do that on a Mac, when I've tried to do it, it's brain...
I can tell you why. You can do it in Windows. Just toggle the hardware. If you play it in software mode, you can take a screenshot. If you play it in hardware, or hardware acceleration is sometimes how it's used, turn that off or turn that all the way down, and you should be able to take a screenshot. Because instead of rendering it on the hardware, it plays it in software.
But my point about it is, it's they've gone out of their way to cripple that function to some degree. Okay, in the Linux world, it's like, no, you're free. Do what you want. You know, and you know, if you don't want to respect whatever the copyright stuff here is, that's your problem, and that's between you and the movie company. But we're going to get out of the way because we're going to make something practical that's going to play a DVD for you, and we're going to do it without some relationship between these big companies. And that's, you know, there's good and bad in that. I mean, there's, you know, you can, I mean, a pile probably of DVD players and
now,
music players and other things.
Is some of the possible issue there, though, that the big companies, because they are corporate entities, are beholden to have to pay the MPEG group to license the codec?
I have no idea. I know that I've been told that there's fairly weak encryption, which is one reason why they were able to break it. And it was all
No, it was in the clear.
But the interesting thing is the weak encryption was there only for the cartelization of the playing of DVDs.
Well, yeah, the CSS stuff is all.
It's all about a cartel, and for the most part, the people who are working on Linux are not about cartels.
Well, except for the people who are running the show, who are a cartel, and they're telling us that we have to get out of here.
Yeah.
So we gotta those people.
No, they only control the lighting and electricity upon which everything runs.
I suppose.
So, Doc, it was great seeing you and catching
great
up again.
You too. I feel like we didn't talk about enough.
We'll catch up later at some point.
Okay.
Listen to the Chris Perillo Show live every Thursday at 7 p.m. Pacific.